Hello, I'm Dan O'Brien, and welcome to this week's Liverpool Life podcast. On today's show...
slight level of tribalism that exists between football fans is not to visceral depths that were plumbed in the 70s and some of the 80s.
Find out why a string of football banning orders have been given to Liverpool, Everton and Tranmere fans. Also on the show...
If you talk to almost anyone in Liverpool, they'll claim some sort of Irish roots. Those roots tend to go back to the 19th century.
Find out about the rich history of Liverpool's Irish community. We'll also have a full sports roundup where Lewis Mell looks ahead to Everton's Europa League tie with Dynamo Kiev. But first, a total of 65 Liverpool, Everton and Tranmere fans have been given banning orders, according to Merseyside Police. Our reporter Jake Cottrell has more on the story.
Merseyside Police say there are currently 32 bans in place against Liverpool FC fans, 25 against Everton fans, and 8 against Tranmere Rovers fans. Football banning orders are issued by the courts after a person is convicted for a football-related violence or disorder, or after a complaint by the Crown Prosecution Service or local police force. I spoke to the vice chair of the official Liverpool Supporters Committee, Paul Anman. He told me that the number of people banned is only a very small percentage of match-going fans.
Periodically, there are a tiny minority of people, and bear in mind, when you think of 40,000 plus Liverpool fans going to Anfield every week, you've got slightly less people going to Goodison, and obviously quite a few less going to Tranmere. That number that you mentioned is a tiny percentage of the match-going public. So I wouldn't let the fact that you've got such a small number of people now banned from going to the match in any way deter people wanting to go and enjoy the beautiful game.
Football banning orders can be given out for incidents both inside and outside of a football stadium, and prevent fans from entering the ground and its surrounding area. Despite the release of the figures, Mr. Amman explained to me that going to a football match nowadays is a very safe experience compared to going in the 70s and some of the 80s.
The principal changes in safety have been obviously the introduction of all-seater stadia, the lessons that are still being learnt from the Hillsborough tragedy in respect of appropriate policing and stewarding, the decisions to not only introduce all-seater stadia, but also to remove the barriers to the pitch so that actually, in the event of a disaster, evacuation could be enabled very, very speedily. These sorts of measures have made going to the match not only a safe experience, but actually a more enjoyable experience. The general tenor and behaviour of the match-going public is, one of camaraderie, and the slight level of tribalism that exists between football fans is not to visceral depths that were plumbed in the 70s and some of the 80s, where sadly a few individuals did make going to the match a very, very bad experience, particularly if you're from a minority community. So if you were black, you wouldn't want to go to the match because it wouldn't be safe. Whereas now, actually, the football going public is largely a cosmopolitan crowd representing, the whole neighbourhood and the whole city.
Overall, the number of football banning orders across Merseyside is relatively low, and the number of arrests at football matches across the country has fallen year on year. More than 38 million spectators attended regulated football matches in England and Wales last season, with only one arrest for every 16,800 spectators.
That was Jake Cottrell reporting. Flat sales in Liverpool have decreased significantly over the last year. A new report by the Land Registry data reveals that over 900 properties were sold in the city between October and December 2014, compared to over 1,000 during the same period the year before. Sinead Munro joins me in the studio now with more on the story.
Figures have shown that the number of flats sold in the city fell by almost half last year, 41% in fact, but the figures are only looking at October to December 2014, but this was still less compared to the same period in 2013.
What were the figures in 2013?
Well, there were 58 properties sold in Croshall Street between October and December 2013, all but one which were flats. And in the same 3 months of 2014, there were just three sold. So we've seen the sharpest contraction in the number of homes sold in any one city. In 2013, 15 flats were sold in the Man Island development on the waterfront between October and December. But last year, that went down to just only two.
What was the reason for this? Is it because people are interested in houses rather than flats? Or is it because student accommodation is becoming a big part of the city's economic structure?
Well, the managing director of City Residential, Alan Beavan, has said the situation was positive and the figures were skewed by the completions of schemes in the city centre. By this, he could be talking about anything from student accommodation in terms of the flats being taken over by, you know, student accommodation schemes. We don't know if this is the main reason, but he did say that the completion of the Vita student accommodation on Cross Hall Street was likely to be the reason for the numbers of flats sold in Cross Hall Street in 2013.
But why would this affect sales figures?
The city's market is recovering and there's been low levels of completions in the last 5 or 6 years. When a large scheme completes, it can distort the figures. But overall, the trend is that sales are actually going up rather than decreasing. For example, Reeds Rains Estate Agency has said their sales figures doubled last year compared to the previous year. And overall, Liverpool is no different to other areas across the country. So, you know, it's in line with the rest of the cities like Manchester and so on.
That was Sinead Monroe discussing the fall in flat sales in Liverpool. Still to come in the programme.
Well, I suppose it's not good for them.
We walk here all the time and we feed them because the weather's bad and just, if you've got stale bread, it's not going to be.
Everyone who feeds them is doing a good cause. As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Find out what is actually shockingly harmful to ducks.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
A fire broke out in Liverpool city centre this week. The blaze on Grafton Lane involved a number of derelict cars in a scrapyard behind the old Cane's Brewery. Ben Matthews has more.
Plumes of black smoke billowed over the city of Liverpool at midday on Monday. Grafton Street was closed as emergency services dealt with the situation. I was at the scene as the fire was being put out.
You can probably hear the fire engines in the background. I'm looking at what seems to be a number of scrap cars, looking very burnt. The firemen are just tidying up the last few hoses and the road's still closed both ways. There's police cordons here and there's two fire engines. But the fire is now out and the police investigation team and the fire investigation team are on their way down.
The scrapyard was only small and held a number of cars in its compound. Merseyside Fire Service watch manager Phil Hart told me it was 5 or 6 cars that were on fire.
Spread to a container which had a quantity of furniture inside the container, but it was quite confined to the actual yard itself.
Did it take long to clean up?
Not really, we're still at it now, but it was quite a well-developed fire. Obviously there's quite a bit of oil and petrol that's involved in vehicles, so it was more awkward to put out because it kept it ignited, but we used foam on the actual vehicles as well, which helps ignite any sort of fuel fire, rather than just using water, which can just start spreading the fire a lot more.
What's the plan from here?
The plan from here is now our investigation team will come have a look at it, just making up all our equipment, and we'll just leave it in the hands of the owners now to sort it out.
Is there any expensive damage caused?
Not really. Obviously, it's a bit more. There's more expense damage caused to the owners down to the scrap value of the cars that they might have been. But you know, at the end of the day, they were derelict cars.
Is there any thoughts on what caused the fire?
At this moment, no.
That was watch manager Phil Hart of Merseyside Fire Service. Over the road from the fire was a local builders merchant, and an eyewitness told me when he knew something serious was happening.
I could smell it coming over. I could smell he was burning over there.
Could you see the smoke?
I could see the smoke, yeah.
How was the smoke?
It was quite high, like. Yeah. It was quite high.
Was you worried about any point that it might spread over here?
Maybe so, yeah.
Thankfully, the fire was extinguished without anyone getting hurt or injured.
That was Ben Matthews reporting for Liverpool Life. Chester Zoo is the most visited attraction in England outside of London, according to new figures. The Association of Leading Visitor Attractions revealed the zoo welcomed nearly 1.5 million visitors in 2014. Our reporter Camilla Nirani has been looking at tourism in the city.
In 2014, there were over 57.5 million visitors, and the figures have been increasing year on year. Nearly 4 million passengers passed through Liverpool John Lennon Airport in 2014, and some 656,000 passengers arrived or departed the city region on one of the three ferry routes. Liverpool's the fifth most popular destination with international visitors, and the eighth most popular destination with domestic visitors.
How many jobs in the city are being supported by visitor spend?
Visitors spend over £3.5 billion a year, which supports over 48,500 jobs in the local economy.
So what does Liverpool have to offer tourists?
Liverpool has so much to offer. People used to associate Liverpool as the birthplace of the Beatles, but the city has transformed so much over the years. Liverpool has the largest collection of museums and galleries anywhere in the UK outside of London. Six attractions drew in over 500,000 visitors in 2014. The Merseyside Maritime Museum, World Museum, Museum of Liverpool, Tate Liverpool, Mersey Ferries and the Liverpool Cathedral. Liverpool's Albert Dock is one of the country's top heritage attractions, boasting museums, galleries, bars and restaurants. And with the city being home to two major football clubs, Liverpool and Everton, who have large fan bases around the world, this brings in lots of tourists on a regular basis. Liverpool One, the retail and leisure development in the city centre, recorded a footfall of over 27 million people in 2014, which is up 4% from the previous year. The city also hosts various festivals and events, which not only draws people into the city, but creates thousands of jobs. Between the 24th to 26th of May 2015, all three Cunard Queen ships will call at Liverpool River Mersey for the 175th anniversary, which will be forever part of the history of the city.
Thank you, Camelia. This week marked the Irish Festival of St Patrick's Day, and celebrations took place across the city. The city has a rich history of Irish immigrants settling here, and the numbers have actually increased over the recent years. Our reporter Luke Holliday has more.
Liverpool is traditionally known for having the strongest Irish heritage of any English city. The 2011 census showed that there was over 3,200 people living in the city who were born in the Republic of Ireland. I spoke to Dr. Frank Shovlin from the Institute of Irish Studies at the University of Liverpool about the history of the Irish community in Liverpool.
Well, I think it's an interesting Irish community because it's a very old one. I mean, if you talk to almost anyone in Liverpool, they'll claim some sort of Irish roots. And those roots tend to go back to the 19th century, particularly to the years around the famine, the 1840s, 1850s. So lots of Liverpool people will have Irish names or Irish heritage. In more recent years, I think there's quite a vibrant student community in the city. Lots of students come, especially from Northern Ireland, to John Moores and Hope, but also to the University of Liverpool.
Ireland's economic struggles since the financial crash of 2008 have triggered even more people to seek their fortunes abroad, and it is estimated that over 90,000 people have emigrated from Ireland to the UK since then. Unemployment in Ireland currently stands at 11%, which is more than double the lows of the mid-2000s, but down from a peak of 15% in early 2012. The Liverpool census showed that there had been an increase of 31% of those living here who were born in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland combined. Dr. Frank Shovlin told me that Ireland has a history of people leaving the country during economic hardship.
Traditionally, when Ireland has gone through rough economic times, people have emigrated, and that's in part because they have somewhere to emigrate to. Everyone in Ireland has friends or family living in this country or in the US or elsewhere. And, you know, when they can't get work in Ireland, they tend to travel.
As the Irish community continues to grow in Liverpool, attitudes have begun to change over recent years. I spoke to Kieran Doolan of Liverpool Friends of Ireland about how he saw a change in the voice of the Irish community.
I'd probably say that you can see the Irish community more on an open basis now compared to what you would have saw the Irish community about 30 years ago, whereas as a result of sort of the Good Friday agreements and all that type of stuff, that the Irish community are not as scared as such to be hiding within four walls.
St Patrick's Day was once again a joyous occasion as people came together to recognise an important part of the city's history and culture.
That was our reporter, Luke Holliday. Birkenhead Labour MP Frank Field is recovering in hospital. The 72-year-old collapsed at a public meeting on Friday evening. Bethan Tolley joins me in the studio with more on the story. So, Bethan, what happened to the politician?
Well, the controversial MP is now recovering at Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospital after collapsing at a public meeting on Friday evening. He was actually at a meeting at Highfield Church on the future of the Rock Ferry High School site when he was taken ill at around 7pm.
Does he still intend to stand in the next election, despite his health issues and his age?
As far as we are aware, yes he is. The MP is 72 and has been a Member of Parliament for Birkenhead since 1979, so he's been around for quite some time now, but nothing seems to be stopping him at the moment though. If he retains his seat, he will be nearly 78 by the time of the next election in 2020.
Will this make him the oldest MP?
The oldest MP in Parliament at the moment is Sir Peter Tapsell, who is 85, so Frank Field is quite a bit off that yet.
You mentioned that Frank Field is rather controversial. How so?
Oh yeah, well, Frank Field has certainly become one of the Labour government's most vocal critics from within the party on the backbenches. Frank Field's political stance has been somewhat at odds with the rest of the Labour Party in recent years, as he has embraced more social conservative ideas and views. He was actually a member of the Conservative Party in his youth, but left because of his opposition to South Africa's apartheid system. However, after Labour's defeat in the 2010 election, he was given the role of poverty czar in David Cameron's coalition government, which made him the first member of the Labour Party to have a role within Cameron's team. And also during the 90s, he served as the Minister of Welfare Reform before leaving the government following differences with Tony Blair, who of course was Prime Minister at the time. It is said that Field viewed his task as thinking the unthinkable in terms of social security reform, but others report that Tony Blair wanted more simpler vote-winning policy ideas.
Is there any update on his health right now?
Well, a Labour Party spokesperson has said that he is responding well to treatment he is getting in hospital, so we should see him return to work soon.
That was Bethan Tolley with the latest on the condition of Birkenhead MP Frank Field. We've been urged not to feed bread to ducks. Each year we feed millions of loaves of bread to ducks in England and Wales, which has caused damage to the birds' health and pollutes the waterways. Our reporter Ruby Molyneux has more.
The Canal and River Trust say the 6 million loaves a year thrown into waterways are equal to 20 full double-decker buses. The bread thrown into the water is like junk food for the birds, and feeding them bread is not good for their diet. Conservationists have warned the innocent act of feeding ducks with bread is harming waterfowl and polluting waterways, as they urge people to use alternative food. I went down to the duck pond at Sefton Park.
I don't feed them with bread now. I can understand this would cause problems because they get too much and it goes rotten in the water. Most places that want you to feed the ducks will sell you little packets of duck food. Well, I think that's probably better for them than bread.
We walk here all the time and we feed them because the weather's bad, and just, if you've got stale bread, it's not going to be.
Well, we wouldn't live, would they? Just everyone who feeds them is doing a good cause. As far as I'm concerned, yeah. People feed them. Why not? It's only natural you're feeding them.
Brown bread, and I feed them these suet things, but mainly the little moor hens, they like those. I know you're not supposed to feed them white bread.
It's kind of a habit, you know, when you start off when you're a kid, it's one of those things that you do. It's only when I have spare bread, it's not like all the time. Actually, the ducks like peanuts rather than anything else.
Bring the children out in the fresh air and show them how to care for animals. They love feeding the ducks and feeding themselves with the bread as well.
Well, we get told don't feed the swans with their bread. I think it was last year they had one of the swans that had their angel disease where he couldn't fly. That's because it's eating the bread instead of its own food.
Soggy bread causes an unhealthy algae growth, spreads disease and encourages pests such as rats. Feeding ducks with starchy snacks can also lead to overcrowding, stress and create excessive amounts of bird excrement. I spoke to Richard James from RSBP, a conservation charity.
So it seems to be a tradition. Obviously, feeding birds bread is a tradition, particularly ducks. You know, everyone kind of associates feeding ducks and swans and geese with bread, and it's something that goes back many, many years. But it's obviously something that we don't want to discourage people from feeding them in small amounts, but just making sure that they feed them the right things. Ducks are best fed on things like corn or wheat, or you can feed them vegetables. So one of the best things you can put out for them is things like peas or sweet corn or lettuce, cabbage, those sorts of things that kind of replicate the aquatic vegetation that they'd naturally be feeding on.
Ducklings that are fed on bread end up being malnourished, while birds that get used to handouts can lose their natural fear of humans and may become aggressive.
Ruby Molyneux there, reporting for Liverpool Life. It's time for your week's sports roundup now with Lewis Miller.
Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers says his team can finish second in the Premier League after his side won their fifth consecutive match by beating Swansea on Monday night. A Jordan Henderson goal sealed the win for the Reds, who were 5 points behind Manchester City, who sit in second place, with 9 games left to play. Rodgers' men face Manchester United at Anfield on Sunday and sit just 2 points behind the Manchester club. A win would see Liverpool leapfrog their rivals into fourth place. Everton travel to Dynamo Kiev this Thursday, 19th of March, hoping to progress into the Europa League quarter-final. Roberto Martinez's side has been poor in the Premier League this season, but a 3-0 win against Newcastle last Sunday will sure to boost their confidence when they travel to Ukraine. The Toffees go into Thursday's match 2-1 up on aggregate, and if they progress, it will be the first time since 1985 that Everton have reached the last eight of a European competition. Meanwhile, Tranmere midfielder Max Power has said that Rovers have 9 cup finals left to stay in the Football League. Rovers won 2-1 away to Cambridge United on Tuesday, despite having captain Steve Jennings sent off, but the Wirral side are just one place out of the relegation zone on goal difference. A Crosby gymnast is hoping for Olympic glory once again in Rio 2016. Dan Purvis struck bronze at London 2012, which was Team GB's first medal in men's gymnastics since the Stockholm Olympics a century earlier, but the Crosby man is looking for gold in Brazil. 2014 saw him take the British title, European pommel horse gold, 3 Commonwealth Games golds, and the World Championship all-round silver medal. The road to Brazil starts next week with the British Gymnastics Championships at Liverpool's Echo Arena, from March the 27th to the 29th. Skyride Liverpool is returning for its second year after the first event last year saw 10,000 cyclists take to the streets of the city. Liverpool City Council has partnered British Cycling and Sky to bring the bike event to Merseyside on Sunday, September the 6th. This year's event will once again feature a traffic-free route to ride through the centre of Liverpool, and the event is open to all ages and abilities. Aintree Racecourse have revealed new developments ahead of this year's Grand National weekend, which takes place next month. An extra 1,500 unreserved seats will be available in the Chair Pavilion down the home straight, which will see racegoers catch the best action in the 168th running of the festival. The Grand National will see champion jockey AP McCoy make his final appearance at the Grand National, which he won in 2010, on board Don't Push It.
Thanks, Lewis.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
As we enter the final part of this week's show, here's a look at what things that are going on in Liverpool. Tate Liverpool will be hosting the first solo exhibit of work by Leonardo Carrington. The exhibit explores the world of Carrington, the fantastical painter and celebrated member of the Surrealist movement. Tickets for the event will be available from £7. Anything Goes will continue its run at the Liverpool Empire Theatre this week. The performance of P.G. Wodehouse's musical will run until the 23rd of March with daily evening and matinee performances. Tickets are still available for the closing run and are priced from £10 to £43.50. For families in the city, Disney on Ice takes over the Echo Arena with their Magical Ice Festival, featuring characters such as Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid and the cast of Frozen. The event is scheduled to run from the 18th of March to the 22nd, with some tickets still available, priced from £17.40 to £44.50. That's all the time we have for this week's podcast. I'd like to say a special thank you to this week's editor, Hannah Kane, and this will be our last podcast for a while, but thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us on a weekly basis. I've been Dan O'Brien, and from all the Liverpool Life team, thank you for listening.